You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, this is Lurk here. Thanks for checking out Lamb Goats, the Van Flip Podcast. If this is your first time checking out the podcast, or if you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a rating and a review on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Those definitely help us out with the algorithm in the podcast world. Also, if you want to go ahead and share this podcast with a friend of yours, please do so. You never know. You might turn your friend onto their new favorite podcast. Make sure you're following the Van Flip on Twitter, at Van Flip Podcast. Actually, go ahead and tweet us right now. Let us know you're listening. Speaking of social media, make sure you follow Lambgoat as well. Give us a like on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram, at Lambgoat. Make sure you visit Lambgoat.com to stay up to date on news, releases, and announcements from around the hardcore and metal world. And if you enjoy watching podcasts rather than just listening to them, all these episodes and more content are available on the Lambgoat YouTube page. So make sure you head over there, give us a sub, and hit that alert bell so you always are notified when new episodes and content are uploaded. At this point, I want to shout out all of our Patreon supporters, JC, Alec, Jeff, Lachlan, and Dylan. Thanks for your continued support. I can't express how much your contributions help out the podcast. Shout out to Dylan for being the winner of this month's Patreon giveaway. He won himself a copy of Year of the Knife's Internal Incarceration on vinyl. The variant is only limited to 200 copies. Stay tuned for our next giveaway. If you would like to become a Patreon supporter to help the podcast out and to be entered in these giveaways each month, visit patreon.com/thevanflip. And one more announcement before I kick on the intro. I'd like to have a new theme intro. So if you have an idea for a new intro, hit us up at Vanflip Podcast on Twitter and let me know. On this episode of the podcast, we have Mark Greenway, aka Barney, lead singer of the OG grindcore band Napalm Death.
Oh yeah, what's this? I feel this. Oh yeah, this is stuff. Oh no. Lambgoat presents the Van Flip Podcast.
This might be the earliest we've ever had to do a podcast before. And yesterday would have been even earlier if we had linked up yesterday, Barney. But
I'm a terrible man. I apologize.
It's not your fault specifically. I think it's just your location. You're, you know, halfway across the world from us. So this is our second time we're doing a kind of like a remote podcast with someone from Europe. We did, I don't know if you're familiar with newer bands, but Loathe. We had Kadeem from Loathe on their new metalcore band, kind of that resemble a lot of the Deftones stuff. But anyway, okay. Barney, welcome to the podcast. We thank you for being on. So you guys have been a band that we've covered, at least on the website, for probably, would you say, Alex, most of the time? That's been
I think since Lamb Goats existed, certainly they've been in our coverage realm.
Yeah, we've been around since the Ice Age, man, so there's probably a fair chance that, you know.
You guys predate the web, well, commercial web by a good
pretty much
decade and a half, I guess.
Yeah.
So are you currently in Birmingham?
No, I'm from Birmingham, but I actually live, in these times, I actually live near the coast. So I live near Brighton, which you might be familiar with.
Okay. So, I've heard of it.
It's the go-to seaside resort over here, you know, which for social distancing measures is a disaster, to be honest. But, you know,
How are things going as far as the pandemic goes?
Yeah, for me, no problem. You know, I live alone, so I've only got myself to look out for. So in my case, it's all right, you know. And like living near the sea, I take my bicycle out like every morning, like early morning. So, you know, I can do things to lift the mood. So for me, it's all right, you know, but, obviously for people with, dependents and, you know, wider family units, it has been a bit of a nightmare, I think, in some respects. So,
Sure. What's the situation in the UK, generally speaking? Over here, we're somewhat of a disaster.
Oh, fucking disaster, you know, a complete disaster. We could compete on disaster levels, you
know. They kind of make it seem like you guys are ahead of us, though. I live in Florida, so we definitely were a second we opened up way too early and then all hell broke loose out here. But,
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. We just have to wear – everything's kind of still open. We just have to wear, like, masks, which, again, a lot of people are, you know, throwing fits about. Yeah. But
sure.
Well, yeah, I don't get that.
From an American standpoint, yeah, the UK, it seems like you guys got hit hard early. But now, you know, my impression as a foreigner is that, you know, things are pretty much under control over there. But here we're obviously not under control.
Yeah, not really, because this push for like this economic like opening or whatever has meant that inevitably there's like rises in cases in a lot of places, you know. So, and it's, I'm no scientist, but the probability to me seems like it's going to go up significantly, you know. I just get that feeling, you know. But yeah, so that's where we are at the moment, you know. People are wearing masks generally speaking, but the whole idea of wearing the mask is to of course protect anybody if you're carrying, you know, the virus,
right.
But you still have to socially distance, you know, otherwise it's kind of, you're defeating the object of the exercise, you know. So, I mean, I'm very pro-mask, I must be honest. I just think it's a human thing. If you can't be bothered, you know, to even sort of partially protect people around you, then I don't know what that says for people, you know. Just because you're asked to wear a mask, is that really like a pair of handcuffs on a person? I don't get that. I don't get that mindset. It's just completely, I don't know, you know, I just don't get the logic of it, you know.
Do you think?
I totally agree. Oh, sorry. I was just going to just dovetail that. I totally agree. But we have a significant portion of the population here in the U.S. that indeed thinks they're handcuffed. They exclaim tyrant. You know, here in Pennsylvania, where I live, our governor's a tyrant to the locals, and there's still, you know, probably half the people around here that don't believe the science as it pertains to masks. And I only point to Japan, because Japan has a population not as large as the United States, but a very large population. And I think to date they've had about 1,200 deaths, and here in the United States were, you know, over 130,000. But the Japanese, you know, they're used to wearing masks. It's been that way. Not that they wear a mask to do anything, but if someone has a cold over there, they wear a mask. You know, it's a common courtesy.
So here's the thing. So Japan is kind of a second home for me, you know. I almost live there, you know. I spend a lot of time there, you know.
Sure.
Obviously not right now, but in previous years, you know. And actually, the first thing that you said was actually correct. They will wear a mask automatically. It doesn't matter, cold or no cold. People will go out with a mask on, you know. My ex-girlfriend used to wear a mask everywhere. You know, even if she took a bike out, she would put a mask on straight away, because it's not only the infection side of things, it's also pollutants as well, you know. Yeah. If you can even slightly minimize, you know, the pass through of particles, particulates in the air, you know, from pollution, why not? You know what I mean? It's not the be all and end all, but at least it's something, you know what I mean? And I think it shows respect for your fellow human beings to wear a mask, actually, because it says, you know what, it might not be the end game, but at least I value your safety, you know what I mean? Yeah. As a fellow human being, you know. So.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's kind of what I do is, what, like, I don't, living here in America, not knowing exactly what is news, media, or, you know, not real news, fake news, as they call it.
Sure.
I don't know what the masks are doing, and I don't know where the virus is and how bad it really is and this, that, or the other. But as, like you said, as a human person, like, just in the case that there is an actual situation going on around me or I may have it, I'm definitely going to put a mask on, because I just think it's like the human thing to do. And I don't necessarily go out that often either, but if I am, I'm, you know, if I go to the restaurant, which is, it's weird here, like we go to restaurants, at least here in Florida, you have to have the mask on when you walk into the restaurant, but as soon as you get to the table, you can take it off. And there's other little things that, you know, that you like get arounds or whatever you want to call them.
But sure, yeah.
The
yeah,
science
yeah.
is questionable.
Though. Yeah, it makes it a little strange. But, you know, again, I don't want to be just like that asshole not wearing a mask walking around. So,
no.
Well, for fear of this devolving into a highly annoying COVID talk, which you can get on any channel right now, I guess let's bring it back, bring it around back to, you know, the band Napalm Death.
Well, before we do that, I have one more thing.
Oh shit!
Yeah, it's simple. Yeah. It's kind of about COVID, I guess, but it also pertains to band stuff. Are your views, Barney, on like wearing a mask and stuff like that, and everything? Does any of that play into the fact that you guys want to get back to playing shows and stuff like that? Because you do have a new album coming out next month, and I'm sure you didn't think that you wouldn't be touring, I don't know, all year long. So do your views on the situation kind of also take come from being in the industry of like the entertainment industry?
No, I wouldn't say so. I just, you hit the nail on the head, really. It's just the basic human thing to do. You know what I mean? That's what it is, you know? So I will do what's necessary. You know, I can be as cynical about government as anybody else can, you know, but there are certain things that, you know, are just the human thing to do. You know, we keep saying that particular sentence, you know, so, yeah, we haven't got gigs right now. Who knows when they're properly going to come back? We actually do have some penciled in for November for certain parts of Europe, which have managed to put gigs on actually already. And it seems to have worked out quite well. So you know, we will, if in November the situation is as it is now, then we'll be good to go, you know. But we will take whatever precautions we need to take, which are, again, the human thing to do. That's what we will do, you know. So there's no reason why not. So
we're seeing maybe a Napalm Death drive-in concert, that we're doing big drive-in concerts here in the States.
I'm not sure about that, but the places like the Czech Republic, Italy have opened up venues, but with obviously space restrictions, as we were talking about. So I don't quite know how that's actually, you know, constructed yet, but we'll see basically, you know.
It'll be interesting for bands that usually are in the heavier realm, because, you know, there's a lot of moshing and contact in general mostly at shows, so it'll be interesting to see how things unfold.
Yeah, I mean, Napalm's kind of probably the top of the heap, you know, in terms of, I suppose, in your face bands, you know, if you want to put it like that. But you know, we shall see. I mean, the idea of like massive separation between people seems like an odd one, but never say never kind of thing, you know. We'll just have to see where it goes. I mean, I don't know whether you're going to talk about this anyway, but it's like with the streaming thing, you know, we did kind of discuss it a little bit, but we decided at that point, which is a couple of months ago, that it wouldn't properly reflect like the Napalm Death live experience. So we decided to just kind of put the lid on it for a little while, which isn't to say that if we chew it over some more and come up with a decent modification of it, that we wouldn't do it. But at that point, we were just like, you know what? No, you know.
Yeah, I understand. I come from a realm where I moonlighted a little bit in the DJ world for a couple of years back, and there were so many live streams, like, you know, DJs would just hop on and they'd just live stream, which they did during the pandemic too. But I got so sick of that stuff back then that it kind of ruined my thoughts on bands doing it. And there are bands that have done it well in this in this situation. But like you said, you do lose a lot of the in-person, you know, like, why would you go to a show? Like, we talked about this with Finn yesterday, but why would you go to a show? You know, it's to interact with the band, interact with your friends, the social aspect, you know, to feel the music, really, you know? I mean, you'd have to crank up the music, and you have to have really good speakers connected to your laptop or computer to really feel
it. I don't think Napalm Death – sorry, go on.
No, you go on.
I mean, Napalm Death especially, you know, I mean, we're renowned for that. You know, we're probably one of the most impact-driven bands out there, you know, I would argue, in terms of the whole experience when you come to a gig. So, you know, for us, it's doubly important that we don't, it doesn't turn into a damp squib, I suppose, you know, but we'll see. Like I say, never say never, you know, and if we can work it properly, then we may do it. You know, it just all depends. But if these things happen in November, then we might just wait till then. You know, we'll see. You know, it's hard because nobody really knows right now. I mean, even, you know, close to the UK, France is going through several spikes in infections. So whether they lock down again in France, whether they do it regionally, who knows? You know, it depends how significantly the infections rise, you know, so we'll just have to see.
Yeah, it's difficult to plan anything because the situation's so fluid.
Of course.
And of course. As far as the live streaming thing goes, I mean, it's. I would check it out. I'll check those out briefly as a matter of curiosity, but I don't think that sort of thing is sustainable, or particularly for, you know, aggressive bands, because there's a sterility to it when you watch a band on the screen with no audience. And that's cool for, you know, maybe one show, but you're going to a show, and particularly a Napalm Death show, for that visceral experience, you know, the sweat, the aggression, the camaraderie, whatever, you know, you want to say. And I just, it doesn't translate well to a live stream.
Sure.
So I don't question your decision, at least thus far, to not do anything in that realm. Makes perfect sense.
Sure.
In any case, so the new album comes out September 18th, I guess. And Throes of Joy and the Jaws of Defeatism. I think I got that right.
Hopefully. Yeah, yeah.
The cover art is pretty striking, too. First question, who played guitar on the album? Because, you know, Wikipedia is normally a reliable source, and it has no guitarist listed, which obviously isn't accurate.
So basically, Mitch and Shane shared the guitars. And John, who's our live guitarist, did some little bits and pieces here and there. So yeah, it was kind of a three-way thing, but mainly Mitch and Shane, you know.
Okay. That's kind of what I had gathered. Trawling the internet.
Trawling the internet, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there is... Sorry, go on.
No, you go on, please.
There is a little bit of confusion, you know, and because Mitch obviously hasn't been in the band for like 5 years. He hasn't played with us, you know. So, but I think when we came to do this latest album, we really wanted him on there. At first, we said, you know, look, do you want to write some stuff, you know? And he did have a couple of bits and pieces, but I think, like, the pressure of the situation, he decided against it, you know, which we respected that. But then we said, well, at least you want to come and play, you know? And he was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know? So he flew over and he played on the album, you know? So that's what happened, basically. But, you know, the thing is that, again, Mitch hasn't played with us for 5 years. And, like, playing gigs with us at this point is pretty much not feasible, you know? The door's never completely closed, but it's realistically, it's not going to happen anytime soon, you know, but at least we could get him in on the album, because his playing style is different to Shane's. You know, there's a slight differentiation in the way they attack the guitar, you know, so it's nice to have that. It gives you little inflections in the playing and stuff. So it was all right. You know, it was, seems to have worked out pretty well, you know?
So, yeah, I've only heard the first single, Backlash. It's definitely a cool tune. It kind of reminded me a bit of I think probably the lead guitar, if you want to call it lead, had a Converge feel to it, which, you know, you guys have been around a lot longer than Converge, so you've influenced them more than they've influenced you, but. I definitely, when I was listening to it, there's some Converge-ish stuff
here. We love Converge, you know, we'll take little flavors here and there. But, you know, you've also got to remember that particular style arguably also comes from bands like Killing Joke, you know, who use that very, very unconventional, you know, style of guitar picking to come up with chords that were not at all common, You know what I mean? And also bands like Sonic Youth as well, you know, completely off the scale in terms of, you know, the notation on the normal spectrum, you know. So I think generally that's definitely something that we like to do, you know, is go across the spectrum and find stuff that's perhaps not always employed and just thrash the fuck out of it, basically. So
yeah, I think that's, you know, I was revisiting portions of your back catalog, and that's just the prevailing. I've listened to you guys, you know, plenty in the past, but not album back to back kind of deal, you know, trying to listen to the whole catalog in one shot or in successive days. And it hit home how obviously it sounds like Napalm Death, but below the surface, just there's from album to album, it sounds like a different band to some degree. Sure. It's just really interesting how certain bands, you know, it's them, Cannibal Corpse, whatever, pick a band, and Napalm Death, you know, depending on the album, before your vocals come in, because you have very distinctive vocals, but you know, you have to almost think for a second, you know, who is this? Because there's just there's a diversity, a subtle diversity, I'll say.
Sure.
And part of that is because you guys have such an expansive catalog and you don't want to, you know, revisit the well over and over again.
See, that's the thing, man. I mean, like, we're 16 albums in now. People have to keep reminding me of that, by the way, because I just don't count, you know. But the thing is, man, like, that this many albums in, why would we want to repeat ourselves? What's the point of that? You know, it's like we'll be not doing ourselves. We'll be doing ourselves a disservice. And also the people that follow us, you know, Jen, and some people have been with us for fucking hell, the 30 years more plus that I've been in the band, you know. So why would you want to do that? You know, if you feel that you've still got interesting things to do musically, lyrically, whatever, then why just try and be a parody of yourself? To me, that doesn't make any sense. But of course, whatever we do, you know, there's kind of, I guess, some kind of, not even rules really, but some loose kind of things that we stick to. So it's got to be obviously extreme, aggressive, abrasive, and confrontational, you know, and whatever we do on the spectrum of extremity, as long as it generally hits those things, then we'll go anywhere we need to, you know. We're not going to sort of stand still and, you know, with our feet tied together, you know, we're going to move forward, you know. It's, I think every Napalm album is just a couple of steps forward each time, you know, and I'm quite happy with that. You know, we live and die by our own sort of decisions in that respect, and so be it, you know.
Right. No, and I think you've gone about it the right way. And obviously, you know, your legacy, speaks to that. It's interesting when I go to these streaming services and they have recommended albums. Apple Music, the essential album is Scum, which may not surprise you.
Okay.
Obviously you weren't in the band then. And, I was just wondering what sort of emotional relationship do you have with an album that is perhaps, your most highly regarded album, but you didn't appear on said album?
You know what, mate? I don't give a shit about that stuff. You know, as far as I'm concerned, that album is part of the history of this band, you know, and I will never think any less of it because of that. In fact, you know, this band is really personal to me, not since I've been in it, but you got to remember is that I was around back at those times. I knew all the guys, you know, we're all from Birmingham. I remember when Scum was being recorded. I remember the guys coming into the pub that very night, you know, after they'd been recording just across town, you know. So I was kind of involved, you know. I was not in the band, you know, but I was kind of around in the right. General scene. Yeah, we had a great scene in Birmingham back in those days, you know. So before I joined the band, Napalm was arguably my favourite band. You know, I saw them as a three-piece, you know, playing in pubs in Birmingham. And I could tell right then that, you know what, this band makes a fucking lot of noise. But they've got that special something that you can't necessarily put into words or put your finger on. You know, I knew it even back then. You know, little did I know I was going to be in the band a few years later, of course. But,
right.
You know, I thought they were fucking incredible, to be honest. As a three-piece, they were fucking mind-blowing, you know, honestly, you know. And I just... So, for me, Scum... And From Enslavement are musical milestones. I don't think you even have to time to a genre. I think generally in the history of music, I would say those two albums are historic, you know, as music goes, you know. And again, that's me stepping outside of the band for a second, you know, and sure. Not just somebody in the band go, yeah, my albums are fucking great, you know, because I'm not doing that, of course.
And if you would remain outside the band for a second, you know, do you, and I don't... the way you answer this question, I realize it puts you in danger of sounding less than humble. But do you consider Napalm Death the fathers, if you will, of grindcore?
Never. I mean, see, this is the thing. People say lots of things like that. You know, there's variations of it, and it's really nice. You know, it's nice that people think of you like that. But the trouble is with that, if you start believing your own hype, you start to get complacent. And I think that that's when bands don't start to kind of dip, you know, quite significantly, you know, with the stuff that they're doing creatively. So I've never looked at it in that way. You know, people say, oh, you're an institution. Well, what does that even mean? You know what I mean? You know, and I'm not being disrespectful when I say that, because again, I know people say it with the best intentions, you know, but all that legacy stuff, all that kind of, award kind of stuff, you know, and I never cared about that stuff, you know. It, for me, it was always about the spontaneity of the music, the vibrancy, you know, the here and the now, you know, the breathless urgency of it, you know, and that's really what it's about for me. You know, I'm kind of what you might call an art wanker, you know. I'm not you know, the awards and the plaudits, you know, it's very nice, but you're only as good as your next album. You know, right, that's really, you know, so.
Well, leaving Napalm Death aside for a second, to whom do we owe grindcore? Is that like a Repulsion thing? See, what's your personal opinion?
Well, here's the thing. I will say this. So that term would not even have existed if it wasn't for Mickey, the previous Napalm drummer, because he invented that term. He just came out with it one day. He just said, well, it's grindcore. What do you mean? You know, well, it's anything that's like ridiculously fast or painfully slow, you know, which a lot of people don't realize. So he was referring to bands like Swans, you know, yeah. Cabbages and Kings, you know, stuff like that. You know, Big Black, you know, anything like that. Even that to him, you know, such was the spectrum, you know, of influence of different bands. So that's where it came from. That was Mickey. You know, nobody else. That was Mickey that came up with that, you know. And then, of course, probably somebody in a fanzine somewhere picked up on it, and it spread like wildfire, you know. So that's grindcore, basically. So I can't give you an absolute starter band, you know. But sure. I would say, for me, it's anything, the very things you've mentioned, Repulsion, Siege, you know, it could be Swans, you know, it could be... Impact Unit, it could be Deep Wound, you know, it could be Norsem from Sweden, you know, it could be Extreme Noise Terror, you know, could be Heresy, you know, could be there's a million bands, you know, but Septic Death, you know, let's throw that one in there. Another fucking SOB, you know, all great stuff, you know.
Now, are you I'm curious as when some of the newer, not newer, but second wave, if I will, of grindcore bands. I'd imagine when they first meet Napalm Death, it's somewhat of a, you know, I don't say starstruck, like it's Brad Pitt or something. But, you know, when Pig Destroyer meets Napalm Death for the first time, there's got to be some sort of gratitude, respect,
You know what, mate? I can't give you any glam stories, you know, because let's be honest, in kind of connected to the last stuff we were talking about, to me, this is always just a network of friends, you know. It doesn't matter whether your band is a starter band or whether you've been around 20, you always treat people with dignity, you know, and just as friends, you know. I don't know. I can't speak for other people, obviously, but I've never been about putting people on pedestals. You know, I got asked a question yesterday, who are your heroes in life? And I couldn't really come up with anybody. There's a lot of people who have contributed great things to art on that side of the discussion, who I, you know, I really love their work, but are they heroes of mine? Probably not. You know what I mean? I just don't look at people that way. So my approach is always to just be friends with people, because that's the best connection you can have. You know, it really is, you know. And yeah, you're right. I mean, there's been a couple of times when people, bands that you know of, they meet you and they're a little bit nervous around you. It's like, mate, chill out. You know what I mean? It's, you're here, we're all together, man. You know, it's just go with the flow and everything will be better than you could imagine, you know. So.
Right. Which reminds me, has Burton Bell of Fear Factory ever personally thanked you for giving him a style to cop?
Oh, no. I mean, he... No,
I say
no,
that
no.
sort of tongue-in-cheek, but...
yeah.
Damn it.
I don't know, because he... You know, Burton, I will say he was quite versatile, you know, back when they were around, because he was doing some stuff with his vocals that wasn't really widespread, you know. I mean, he was doing the kind of Swans, you know, Head of David sort of thing a little bit, and not many people were doing that. So I would say, you know, he kind of went under his own steam quite a bit, you know. People, you know, everybody's got their own view on these things, you know, but... especially with that first album they did. I mean, not many people were doing that, mixing it with the quite crunchy metal style, you know what I mean? So,
right.
Fair enough, you know what I mean?
Well, it's, when I hear Soul of a New Machine, it's just like every single time, the heavy parts.
Yeah.
It's like, damn, Barney's here.
And, I mean, you know, everybody's got to take, you know, whatever they do, vocals, guitars, everybody's got to take it in the direction that they see fit, you know. I mean, I'm quite selfish in that respect. I'll do what I think I need to do, you know what I mean? I won't do it to, like, fit in with anybody else, you know, because I think you have to be. If you want to achieve the best that you can with your art, it's a pretty selfish pursuit, you know. And I'm not a selfish person, but I am selfish in that respect, you know. I'll do what I think I need to do rather than necessarily conform to people's expectations, you know. So.
Right, absolutely. Dave, I feel like you had a question.
Yeah, since we're talking about the grindcore origins and stuff like that, at what point did you guys decide to start throwing in a little bit of death metal and then later on, like, more groove metal elements into the band? Was that something that was already kind of going on before you stepped in, or is that something that maybe once this core of members got together, was that something that you guys kind of just randomly started doing? Like, we talked about earlier how not every album is the same, so is that just like a logical thing that you guys progressed in that aspect?
So here's the thing. So if you listen to the Scum album, Side A especially, it's, you could say, if you're going to break it down into percentages, it's 50% Celtic Frost. You know what I mean? Is that or is that not death metal? I would say it probably is, you know. So here's the thing. Like, metal has always been part of Napalm Death. You know, it's not – it's and this is where – this is where I sometimes get a little bit sort of like, you know, because the automatic thing for a lot of people is to call Napalm Death a metal band. And to me, that's such a narrow categorization of what we do. You know, it's really not accurate, you know, as a term, you know. And I know, you know, sort of the categorization of bands is sometimes seen as quite a surface thing, you know, and a bit sort of peripheral and all the rest of it. But, you know, in and of itself, you know, Napalm Death is equal parts hardcore punk as much as it is metal any day of the week, you know, and also an equal part of the compounded other influences like post-punk, you know, like noise, like industrial music. I could give you, you know, we could go through the list, you know, but so to me, it's not really a metal band, you know, hasn't been. No, you could argue, like, when I stepped in on Harmony Corruption, when we were finding our feet, yes, you know, the death metal thing was in there, but that was also a perception because we went to the Morris Sound Studios, which was, you know, it was intrinsically linked, you know, just by association, you know, to that stuff. So
Morris Sound in, we in Tampa? Was that the one in Tampa?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that is death metal heaven, basically.
But the thing is, here's the thing. We didn't even really want to go there in the first place. It was the label that really pushed us into that, you know. And secondly, the sound that we got out of Morris Sound was not what we wanted. You know, we were looking for a far more raw sound. But we left Scott Burns, a producer who did a lot of death metal albums, we left him to his own devices. And I'm certainly not being down on him because of that. But because we left him to his own devices, he constructed something that was very much how he would do it with a lot of other bands from who had recorded at Morris Sound before. So for us, for me, and it's always been my view, you know, the songs on that album are pretty good, you know, really good. But the production is not a Napalm Death production, in my humble opinion, like any day of the week.
Which makes sense. How does an upcoming band go to Scott Burns and tell him what to do?
Sure. But I mean, you know, we're also, I'm not saying there is any blame, but we would also be to blame because we should have stepped up and like interacted more, you know, in that process, you know, when it came to the mix and stuff like that. But we didn't, you know, so there you go, basically. But so I think that maybe answers part of your question. But it was never a calculated move. All the elements that you picked out, David, in your first question, Napalm's not a calculating band, you know. It was never a calculated move. Oh, yeah, no, well, now it's 1994. We must sound like groove metal, whatever that even means, you know. It just kind of happened, you know. We were mixing the fast stuff with more chord stuff, experimental stuff, you know. So some of the beats, which were influenced by some really quite amazing drummers, you know, that weren't even in metal bands, you know, that were in more quote-unquote alternative bands. Sonic Youth, you know, was a big influence on those mid-period albums. So that's maybe where it comes from. And I think sometimes it gets mischaracterized, you know, if that's even a word. But, yeah, it gets mischaracterized. So it was just a natural process, you know, and everything's a stepping stone, you know. All the things that we've done, even in some cases where I look back and I kind of go, yeah, well, it still wasn't quite Napalm for me, you know. I still wouldn't change it because everything is a learning process. We hadn't have got to where we are now if we hadn't done those things, you know, in the early to mid period. So.
Sure. And you mentioned the label. At the time was Earache Records, and obviously you're on Century Media now, but what kind of relationship do you have with Earache and Digby Pearson, if I have his name correct, the founder of Earache? What kind of relationship does Napalm Death have with him now? Because I imagine he's still, you know, copyright holder, licensing holder to a good portion of your assets.
Yeah. God, you must be psychic or something, you know, because you're spot on, you know. But so here's the thing, we had a very fractious relationship with Earache back in the 90s. Some of it played out in the press, you know. It got quite nasty, you know. I mean, even me, you know, I'm not one usually to give people a kicking in the press because I just think it's kind of unproductive, doesn't really solve anything, you know. And when I say that, I mean people I've worked with. But like Earache at that point was a nightmare, you know, to deal with, and it just got really frustrating. But you live and learn, you know. You hopefully as a human being you learn things. And actually now we would never necessarily directly collaborate with Earache again in terms of releasing stuff, but we have collaborated on a few things other than recording albums. And you know what, the relationship is actually pretty good now, you know. We've kind of learned to live with each other, and last time I saw some of the Earache guys, it was actually really nice, you know. It was a really nice time. It was good fun. It was nice to see them, you know. And so we've moved on a little bit now, you know. You know, yes, we don't own the rights to any of that stuff, you know, but such is life, you know. We shouldn't have signed a bloody contract that had no time limit on it, you know. So
and how did you, how go did you- No, I appreciate that. I guess as long as you're getting the checks, then, you know, that
yeah.
keeps the relationship afloat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's at times, you know, some of the stuff we get from them is much needed, you know, because, you know, in a band like this, it's not a high rolling band, you know, it's not yeah. a, you know, a big sort of big cash generating band. So, you know, you kind of need to fall back on some stuff sometimes, you know.
Well, see, when I was a teenager, I thought you guys were a high rolling band because I guess, you know, Eric had the licensing deal in the United States with, was it Columbia?
So yeah, we didn't see any of that money though, you know what I mean? You know?
Right. But to the average, you know, person's like, oh, they're a major label.
You know what?
Metal band.
There's a story to that as well, you know. I mean, we're, basically, we got sold to Columbia. We didn't have any choice in that matter either. And you're quite knowledgeable about Napalm Death, clearly, Alex. You would probably know that me, certainly me personally, and the rest of the guys I can speak for, we would never sign to a major label. Like, what's the fucking point of that? You know, it just, it doesn't serve us. It's my ethos doesn't go down that road. You know what I mean? And also, the time on Columbia, if it's anything to go by. So, there was all these, as you would expect, there's all these high expectations and all the rest of it from some people. So it was a fucking disaster, you know. It seemed to work okay for like a year, and then all of a sudden they just lost interest in us. And consequently, I've always said this, it set us back 2 or 3 years. You know what, mate? On Utopia Banished, we were doing fucking great in the US. You know what I mean? We were an underground band, like doing our own thing, not being dictated to, and we were doing really well. And the band was on an upwards trajectory by not compromising, you know, by not steering ourselves in a direction for commercial interest. We were doing really well. Then ironically, when the big commercial Behemoth comes along and takes us on board, completely destroyed, you know, within a year. Which is not to say that, you know, they took on some people at Columbia specifically to deal with Napalm Death, Godflesh, Cathedral, and a couple of others, I think. And the actual individuals that were working mainly on Napalm Death were fucking brilliant, you know what I mean? But they had their hands tied. They would have walked through fire for us, you know, within the space of a few months. They were brilliant, you know what I mean? But of course, such is the power of the entity that they were in. They can't make decisions, you know. They can't yay or nay stuff, you know, without it going to another department. And therefore, it was kind of, it was a bit of a non-starter, you know. So,
well, I suppose I believe I read, perhaps I dreamt this, but I think I read that you met Steve Perry from Journey.
I did.
So if nothing else, the relationship with Columbia yielded that strange encounter.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. So it was actually my birthday and we were on tour in the States. And, you know, I like a bit of classic rock, you know what I mean? And so actually one of the people from Columbia, one of the great people I was just talking about, like, arranged it. So what happened was, I'll give you the story. I'll try and keep it short. So basically we were playing in I think it was LA, essentially LA. And, I was just there on the day and this limousine turned up and I'm like, and they were like, that's yours. I was like, what are you talking about? You know, me and limousines just not. We're not bedfellows, you know what I mean? I was like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean? And so I got into the car, and I can't remember exactly who was with me at the time, but we were like going through LA, and then we ended up in the, I think it's Van Nuys or Van Ness or something like that. Is that
Van
like
Nuys?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, what the fuck's going on here, you know? And then all of a sudden we turned down kind of this, we call them industrial estates in England, so where the factories are, you know, you have a few factories in. We tell them, what the fuck is this, you know? So we went through the side door, and then it's got markedly more luxurious. There were kind of potted plants and nice carpets and all the rest. I was like, what the fuck, you know? Have I been hijacked, you know, or something? And I walked around the corner, and, like, there was Steve Perry rehearsing, like, with his band, you know, like, right in front of me. I was like, fucking shit, you know what I mean? And his voice, you know, it was on the solo album, you know, Love of Strange Means. His voice was fucking immense. You know what I mean? I mean, it really was, you know. I was kind of just sitting there in a chair and his voice just fucking pinned me to the wall. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what it was like. You know? He was fucking on fire, man. You know what I mean? Nowadays, he's shot, man. I don't follow him, you know, but I saw him singing live and it was not, you know, as understandably, you know, it's lost all that range, you know.
Unfortunately for him, you know, his vocal prowess was such a, you know, it's his thing you know, I can't articulate it. And when you reach a certain age, it's impossible. It's physically impossible to duplicate that sort of thing.
Yeah, so
he put himself in a box in that regard, as opposed to, you know, Paul McCartney. Well, some of his stuff is vocally challenging, but even more so, you know, Roger Waters or whatever. These guys can get by. Steve Perry, though, trying to sing, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't think of a jerk. Don't Stop Believing. You know, he just can't do it. You can do the Billy Joel route, I guess, and go down like three keys or something. But then, you know, it's just a parody.
I dare to go there. It's just not happening. You know what I mean? So for me personally, you know, and I wouldn't want to anyway, you know. So.
Right. Well, Barney Greenway can, you know, he can do his vocals into his 80s, you know, because you're not restricted by those parameters.
Yeah, sure.
But in any case, sorry, Dave, I just had to ask. So did you actually talk to Steve Perry, or are you just watching him work?
No, I spoke to him. He was a really nice. I mean, he kind of, I guess, I hate to stereotype people, but he kind of did fit the stereotype. He's very quiet, very soft spoken, you know. And I said to him, I don't think he quite knew what Napalm Death was. I said, oh, you know what, Steve? I said, you know, if you want to come down to the gig tonight, man, you're fucking quite welcome. You know what I mean? You know, bring some friends if you want. Oh, yeah, I might just do that, you know. And I think maybe then what happened is, like, one of the people that was with us maybe played him, like, some Napalm, and he was just, like, probably fucking terrified.
I'm not going to that fucking show.
Yeah, exactly, Yeah.
But could you imagine? Well, could you imagine Steve Perry showing up to a Napalm Death show?
Could you imagine him standing on the side of the stage, just like melting? You know, with like
or finding out that in some weird way he is actually like a small fan of the band too. You know?
Yeah. Imagine if he started ripping them kind of vocals on his following release. You know what I mean?
So how much?
The
how
Steve
much of
Perry
an influence?
Napalm Death split never happened.
Yeah.
And I will always. I just wanted to ask since Dave brought it up. Have you ever found out that anyone, you know, a celebrity, minor celebrity, someone unexpected, you know, was a Napalm Death fan or even knew who you were, which I guess
there's
is an accomplishment when it comes
Post
to
Malone.
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, the obvious one, which everybody fucking knows about now, is the Jim Carrey thing. You know what I mean? And
sure.
We all know about that. The other one is there's a footballer. I'll just mention one because, to be honest, I can't really think right now, but there is a few. But the other one is... a guy called Puyol, if you look him up, he's an ex-Barcelona footballer, you know, basically a big, burly fucking defender. You know, he had long, curly hair. He was a beast, you know. He used to knock people off the... So he played for one of the biggest football clubs in the world, you know what I mean? So he was apparently a big Napalm fan, you know, and was seen, like, sporting Napalm shirts.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
How was it that you guys, speaking to other people that like your band and blah, 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 you guys were able to play the final tour with Slayer. How was that for you guys, like, just to, you know, be on that bill with, you know, they're an American, American death metal band that are legendary.
More accessible bands generally, I mean, we thought it was a joke at first, you know, when we were told about it. We were like, nah, somebody's pulling a fast one, you know what I mean? But now it was, I think what happened was, as I was told, you know, as I was told this, so Tom Araya's brother works on the crew, you know, and I think he's a Napalm fan, and he suggested it, you know, to whoever he needed to suggest it to. And we got asked to play on the bill, you know, and it was interesting, you know, the other bands on the bill, much more accessible than we are. I mean, you know, we were making at 4 o'clock in the afternoon some heinous fucking noise, you know, and like, of course, naturally, Some people are into it. Other people are like, what the fuck is this shit? You know, you could see it on their faces. But great, you know, we like to entertain. We also like to annoy, you know, in equal measure. You know, we get a kick out of that. But but I have to say this, you know, we, on that tour, which was a big tour, you know, by any measure, we were treated fantastically well. You know, they were brilliant to us. You know, they, you know, you expect sometimes being the first band on a bill like that, yeah, you might get treated like shit, you know, kind of patronized. And, right. You know,
rest here's your dressing room, Slayer. Here's your dressing room. Oh, here's your closet.
Yeah. So, but they were brilliant, you know. They were great, you know, anything we needed within reason, of course, they were just incredibly accommodating, you know, and I couldn't say otherwise, you know, it ended up being a blast that tour, you know, it was actually, you were excited to get up every day and play that gig, even though we were first on, so the places were, you know, weren't significantly full, you know, but it doesn't matter, you know, I mean, you know, we were there to do our thing and make some fucking noise, you know, and that's what we did, you know.
How many Slayer sets did you watch?
I had a passing view. What I would do, I'd go in and watch three or four songs one night and then go in at a different part of the set another night and watch some more songs and stuff, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, bear in mind, I saw Slayer on Hell Awaits, you know. I saw him in England, you know, on Hell Awaits, and they were fucking incredible, to be fair, you know what I mean?
As and with all due respect to Slayer 2020 or Slayer 2019, it, you know, no Jeff Hanneman, no Dave Lombardo.
I just kind of, you know, the way I sort of looked at it was they were kind enough to ask us to be on the tour, but I also, you know, it's their choice to do what they do, you know, and it's their choice whether they finish or not, and I'm neutral about it, you know. I'm not one of these people that will cry tears, you know, over Slayer going, because they were great in the early days, you know, and I mean that. I don't mean that disrespectfully at all. I mean, I'm just not that sort of person. I don't cry about bands going because I respect that people feel when there's a time to finish, there's a time to finish, you know, and if they make that choice, that's their choice and nobody else's, you know, so that's my way of looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that I'd stop listening to Slayer after Divine Intervention. Yeah. But, I mean, I respect what they do. But
Totally, yeah. For me, it was like, to be honest, it was South of Heaven, really. And then after that, like, just bits and pieces of other albums, you know. And yeah, like you say, you know.
But, yeah, nonetheless, getting to tour with them, that had to be kind of a mind blow.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it was. It was, you know, and the band are like really nice to us as well. So, you know, and not just talk about the crew. So,
even Kerry King
didn't see much of him. I mean, he said hello to us every now and then, but didn't really see much of him. You know, he was quite quiet, at least when I was in the vicinity, or, you know, to when I might come into contact with him, he was quite quiet, but you know, he hung around and stuff. You generally didn't see him, you know, till a little bit later on in the day. So whereas we were like kicking about all day, one or two of those guys would come down earlier on, but a couple of them would not show up till like really later on. Cause obviously they would always generally have hotels off site, whereas we were obviously on site as soon as and on site for the rest of the day, which was fine. You know, I mean, mate, I will say this one thing, the catering on that tour was fucking insane. I've never seen anything like it, you know.
They wanted to go out with a bang too, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What are we talking, lobster rolls and sushi or?
Yeah, I'm really strict, like vegan, like health vegan as well. So for me, there was a ton of stuff on there, you know. But yeah, above and beyond that, it was insane, you know. So it's pretty brutal, you know. But,
yeah, well that's definitely a positive, you know.
Yeah. Guys, I hate to throw this right in the middle of a lot, but I gotta call it because of my next interview is meant to be starting. You know, so.
No, well, we don't want to impinge on anyone else's time, and sure. We appreciate that you're a an important guy and have a lot of people to speak to.
As much as you hate
that sort of label.
Yeah.
We apologize for keeping you.
No, that's all good. That's all good.
Well, I could talk for another 5 hours, but
sure,
I will not.
Mate, I could talk the legs off a fucking donkey, you know, so I'm always ready to talk, you know.
Well, we will have to link up again at some point after the album's out or whatnot.
Mate, but whenever, just, you know, tell the people that coordinate these things. I'm always ready to chat, you know. So.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Barney.
Well, have a good one, Barney.
Cheers, guys. Been an honor and a pleasure.
Talk to you later.
Cheers. See you later, guys.
Bye.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.